Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
Yes. Hey, I'm Carol Jurgensen Sheets, and I am the host of Sex Help with Carol the Coach. It's all about strength, hope, and recovery, and I am here to welcome you tonight. I have to tell you, I've had over 100 shows. And 3 times we have had technical difficulty. Twice, it was my carrier's issue. But last week, it was mine. So I have to confess, because you know what I believe in? When you hold secrets, it does nothing but eat you up inside. And my internet was down. Both through the Comcast system. Both my phone lines, my internet, and I had been working for about 5 days, because it was down for actually 6. I had been working with my iPad and hooking it up to my phone. For most of you sex addicts, you know how this works, because you are technologically more savvy than the average person. So I had a personal hotspot, thought I'd have no problem, and I could not get on. And I was so sad, because I was going to talk to you about how to do an intake. And I had a live person that was willing to go through that intake process with me. So, again, I am sorry. I saw how many people downloaded the show thinking they were going to get a show, and they didn't get a show because I couldn't get on. So, again, my apologies. And the next time I'm having a technical difficulty, I'll make sure that I run to the office or I do something to avoid that. Like I said, I really thought I could make that happen. And I hate when I inconvenience you. You know, I'm the kind of therapist that believes in making an amends when I make a mistake. And if you're listening to the show and you tried to log on last week, or you downloaded the show and you didn't get what you need, give me an email at carolthecoach@aol.com, and I will send you a free gift for having been inconvenienced. That's what I actually do when I double book somebody. I double book somebody probably once a year. And then I do have some double bookings, but almost invariably I can prove, hey, that was not my fault. You had the wrong day. You had the wrong time. They pull out the card. It's not what they thought. I always feel vindicated when that happens, but I make a mistake. And so when I make a mistake with my client, their time is really valuable. I charge them when they don't show up, so I always give them a free session if it was my mistake. So I can't give you a free session, but I will be more than happy to give you a free gift. Now, it's gonna not going to be anything amazing, but it's going to be one of my shortcut manuals that helped you to create a better life. I have one on self-esteem. I have one on parenting. I have one on depression. I have one on being single. I have one on healthy sexuality. So if you designate what you want, I will be happy to send that to you. If you don't, you'll probably get a life skills manual brochure, because that really goes into about five of my columns that I've written that gives you the shortcut bullets to how to make your life more meaningful. Most of you know, I'm called Carol the Coach for a reason. I am a certified sexual addictions therapist. I am a psychotherapist. And I am a personal life coach. And so these brochures / shortcut manuals are a way to help you live your best life. And that's what I believe you can do as a sex addict. I can't emphasize that enough. And if you're the partner of a sex addict and you're listening to this show, I want you to know I feel your pain. I've said it before. I'll say it probably every show. Sex addicts carry the shame, but partners carry the pain. And that means that sometimes the partners I work with actually have more triggers than the sex addicts. That's always very, very unfortunate. And, of course, my job is to help them figure out how to stop doing that to themselves. It may have been the sex addict's fault for creating a situation that creates triggers, but now as a partner, it is up to you to make your life different and to look at it in a positive spin and to have more self-confidence. You know, I was talking to a woman today, and she is not married to a sex addict, but her husband is very black and white. And they have a beautiful lake home property, and he does not want one of those sheds / barns built on their lake home property. Not this year. And she has been waiting a year to have that built. She has the money. She wants to do it. She wants him to embrace it with her. And he said, no, I'm not going to let you bully me into this. I don't want it. Not this year. And we're not going to do it. So, okay. The power struggle ensues. She is not going to do it without his consent. That's not how she wants to have a marriage. But as a result, he gets to bully her into not doing it all. And what I tell my couples, any couple, whether you have a sexual addiction or not, is negotiation and compromise is a really important part of a healthy marriage. So they're not doing that, right? And, you know, one of the things that I said to her is, you got to see if you can get him to negotiate and compromise. And she said, well, that's going to be a no-win situation because he already says to me he thinks that I am manipulating my way into getting my way. And so if I begin to say to him things like, honey, you know, my therapist says we got to negotiate and compromise because that's what makes a healthy marriage. Let's figure out, you know, I can maybe wait a year, but let me know that we can get started on this plan in the fall or in the spring, that you'll work with me, we'll figure out some sort of compromise. We need a place for our kayaks, our canoes, our floats. I don't want to carry them up this huge hill. You know, we left most of them down at the dock all year. They got messed up. We got the money. Let's make it happen. And I said, you know what, if he does, if he makes you feel guilty for wanting to get some sort of compromise and negotiation out of him, and if his message is no, and there's no real good explanation, which thus far there has not been any explanation, then I got to tell you, he's bullying her. And, you know, so oftentimes when I'm working with sex addicts and their partners, this kind of thing goes back and forth. Okay, so I said, you know, sweetie, you are on two paths, and here they are. with a man who is this definitive about the fact that he doesn't want something, but yet he won't give you a reason for it, you either have to accept it and look at all of his other fine qualities and focus on those and absolutely remove yourself from the offending issue, which is he does not negotiate and compromise. Or you have to continue to assert yourself, see if you can't get some sort of negotiation going. And if you don't, and you can't make it, because deep down inside she goes, gosh, I can't believe I married a man that wouldn't do this, that would not work with me, that couldn't empathize with me. And I said, you know, if it doesn't work out, then here's what I believe. If you've tried all the normal things and that's not helping either, you have put in your time, and you know what? You have improved your picker. And by that I mean that you've improved your ability to pick somebody in the future who is more empathetic. And if you know that that's a value that you really have to have, then you need to let go of this relationship, do it in love, do it with integrity, move on, live however many months, years, decades, single, and if and when you meet that next person, make sure you pick somebody who really empathizes and knows how you feel, even if that isn't an automatic yes, they're willing to work that out. Neither one of those choices are the best choices, but they definitely work. There's no need to stalemate yourself by not going further and yet holding resentment because you picked somebody who never had this skill. If this sounds like your relationship, feel free to call me at 646-595-3284. In the meantime, I'm going to read you a fairly lengthy email. And I promised her, Sandy and Paul, I promised her that I would read it over the air and I would help her get a grip on what's going on. She says, good afternoon, Carol. I'm a recent listener to your podcast and find them very helpful. I'm conflicted about the current situation with my husband of 24 years. He recently admitted to me that he had 4 overlapping affairs over the course of 5 years. One of those affairs lasted the full 5 years, and he fell in love with her. All of the women were married with children except one. 3 of the women were located via Craigslist. The love of his life affair was via an MSN chat room. His involvement was strictly sexual. No gifts, no outings, no meals, shared, etc. The exception was his love. He said that he had a deep connection for her, stronger than his love for me at the time, by his own admission. He won't answer much, he won't talk, but he did tell me that he would meet these women, make them orgasm, and he would get off on making them come, his words. He would orgasm and then he would get dressed and get the hell out of there. Again, his words. He said that these women made him feel good, particularly made him feel loved. They worshipped his sexual prowess and would call him continuously. He decided to stop cheating and called off his long-term affair when our first son was 28 months old. Okay, so right now, Sandy, I've got to tell you that one of the addictions that you're husband probably suffers from is that seduction addiction. He's into the conquest. He's really not into a relationship. There certainly is no intimacy, no compromise, no negotiation, no tit for tat, no sharing. He comes in, basically is concerned about their orgasm, which makes him orgasm, and then he's out of there. Now, that is a specific type of sexual addiction. That's a person that has, more than likely, a sexual intimacy disorder. I call it a sexual intimacy disorder, but what I really mean is it is an intimacy disorder. He cannot get close. But he does get some sort of charge about hooking up with them, being sexual, and then getting, if I may, the hell out of Dallas. Now, the other thing I'd want to know if I were seeing your husband is how much fantasy is there before he shows up the first time? If there's a huge amount of fantasy, then he probably suffers from a fantasy sexual addiction also. But I don't want to assume that because I don't have that information. Fantasy is huge, and sometimes fantasy better than the sexual act itself. Okay, Sandy writes, after he admitted this a month ago, I asked if he thought he could be a sex addict. His response was no, because I don't have sex with men or prostitutes. Whew. He doesn't know what sexual addiction is. If you remember, sexual addiction has to do with a preoccupation with sex, an inability to stop, compulsive behavior. It's when your integrity is diminished, when you're lying, cheating, or making up stories. You know, it has to do with whether your brain craves the oxytocin or the dopamine that is oftentimes produced with sexual addiction. This guy thinks it's just about having sex with men or prostitutes. Of course he doesn't think he's a sex addict, but Paul, it is so much more. So, he tells her lately that he wants a divorce. That very same night he tells her that. Please understand that I have been double blindsided. I thought we had had a good marriage. We have lots of stress with 3 kids, 8 and under, but I had no suspicion that my husband was unhappy, nor that our relationship was in trouble. We have been together for 20 years, and we both admitted that we loved each other. Now he is claiming that he has been unhappy for many, many years and that the affairs are a result of his unhappiness in the marriage. It is not the cause. Well, Sandy, there are a few partners who absolutely are bamboozled. They absolutely have no idea that this stuff is going on. They literally didn't have a clue. But I got to tell you, in most cases, sexual addiction does leave clues. And I'm a believer that if you listen to your head, what your thoughts are saying, what your self-talk is saying, and if you listen to your emotions, and maybe those emotions are, wow, we're not being as sexual, or wow, he doesn't want to kiss me at night, or wow, we're not connecting, and you listen to your intuition, which is that gentle knowing that, right, more than likely you had some clues, but they weren't in your face enough to cause you a problem. You were able to do something that sex addicts do so well, and that is they compartmentalize. Sex addicts are able to put their wife in a box and say, I love her, but right now I'm going to engage in this behavior. They're able to put their families in another box and say, you know what? My family means the most to me, but what they don't know won't hurt them. And so they participate in illegal or immoral behavior, compulsive and obsessive behavior that's called sexual addiction. Just in the same way that a sex addict compartmentalizes his behavior, I truly believe that a lot of partners do the same thing. They make excuses for their husband. You know, he didn't want to come to the play that my daughter was in because he was working so hard at work. When in reality, it gave the sex addict time to be with his other lover. He couldn't come to the reunion because he just wasn't feeling well. He hasn't been touching me as much because he's been exhausted from work. We've been having fights, and he's much more distant, and that's the reason why we're not connecting. You know, again, all these things could be plausible in the real world, but ultimately, it's the denial and the compartmentalization a partner goes through to excuse the addict's behavior. So, Sandy said that, you know, this man said the affairs are a result of his unhappiness in the marriage, not the cause. His admission of the affairs, the result of him feeling the urge to cheat again. After an 8-year hiatus of trying to be good and be a good husband. We have had 2 more children in these 8 years, and he claims he swore off cheating and resorted to a lot of masturbation with porn. Okay, already what I say is, I get the fact that maybe he is not participating in what sex addicts call deal-breaking behaviors. That's cheating on their wives. And unfortunately, if there was one thing that I could change universally about the men and the women that I work with, is that they would see behaviors like cheating, prostitution, chatting online, emails, sexting, texting, you know, they would see that as deal breaking, but they didn't see the behaviors that actually led up to the deal-breaking behaviors. You know, for so many men and women, if a man or a woman has engaged in sexually addictive behavior, it is my belief and the belief of so many therapists and certainly SA and some SAA groups that chronic masturbation is something that needs to cease for at least the time being, and perhaps forever. But I will thus say, let's do it for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, or a year. Now, I know for the sex addict listening, that sounds like I'm really basically saying stop eating and sleeping. That chronic masturbation is such a necessity, you can't even ever imagine not doing that. But I'm here to tell you that what chronic masturbation does is it unfortunately produces chemicals that react in the brain, and their brain hits, keeps the brain lit up. And I've never, ever, 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 okay, you know I mean business, I've never met a sex addict who could masturbate and not fantasize about somebody other than their loved one. They fantasize about the porn, they fantasize about the prostitution, they fantasize about the exhibition, they fantasize about the exposure. You know, I'm here to tell you that masturbation is a gate opener for sexual addiction when you're an active sex addict. Okay. Now, I've talked to a lot of pastors, ministers, priests who really feel like masturbation is a bad thing. And I've talked to other certified sex therapists, which are not sexual addiction therapists, but sex therapists who believe that it's absolutely normal and natural and used in the right way. It can be very helpful in development and very helpful in meeting one's own needs. How do I say this? I kind of believe in both. I definitely believe that at the beginning, it can be something normal and natural and taught to enable person to use themselves and to depend on themselves for their own sexual gratification. However, developmentally, what I believe more than that is that eventually it works into some fantasies that I personally don't believe are healthy. You know, there are a lot of women out there that fantasize about being raped. And I don't mean the violent, horrible knife at your throat rape. I mean about being overtaken, sexually seduced, overtaken so that they are out of control and they have to do what the other person wants. Although that can be considered a normal fantasy, that very easily can be a fantasy reenacted by some trauma in one's childhood. And here's what I believe. I believe that we are such a sexualized society, from the commercials we watch on TV to the clothes that we buy at Kohl's, that, you know, I mean, you don't have to go to Frederick's or Victoria's Secret to buy very seductive, flirty clothes. And when women do that, they sexualize themselves, and then they are objectified by men. Okay, I know I'm digressing here, but I guess what I mean is Paul, in this email, is trying to convince his wife that it's okay for him to masturbate with porn because he swore off cheating. And I'm here to say, Paul, you are one step away from cheating again. You cannot masturbate with porn and keep that under control. You're a sex addict. She says that, let's see here, he has also posted and responded to ads on Craigslist to correspond with women, swap photos, and possibly telephone phone sex, but never acted upon a face-to-face meeting. This was all accomplished with secret email accounts and the use of his smartphone. This past March, he listed an ad on Craigslist and began corresponding with a woman with whom he was planning to meet and have sex. He stopped himself before meeting her and pondered why he was doing this. He determined that he was unhappy in his marriage and that he needed to get a divorce. Of course, I, as his wife, was unaware of all this until recently. Well, that's the lie that Paul tells himself. I mean, very clearly, he could be in an unhappy marriage. I'm not here to say that he's not. But an unhappy marriage is not the reason that somebody becomes a sex addict. It is not the reason that somebody cheats. That is the lie that the addict tells himself. That's the rationalization. That's the justification that he has to tell himself to feel better about the behavior. I guess the good news is if he's trying to blame her, then deep down inside he really knows that he needs to blame himself. And so, when we come back, we're going to be talking about what you can do if some of this sounds familiar to you. Whether you're the addict or the partner, there is hope, there is strength, and there is recovery in all of this. And I'm just getting ready to do a presentation that says the gift of being a sexual addict, because I do believe it's a gift. And on the 20th of this month, I want everybody to tune in, because we are going to have the guru of sexual addiction on the show. We're going to have Dr. Patrick Carnes, and he's going to be talking about sexual addiction and what that means and how it's changed over the years, and what the hope, strength, and recovery is in that. So I am so looking forward to that opportunity to talk with Dr. Carnes, who, of course, trained me. Now, if you have a question, feel free to call in at 545-3284. Again, that number is 646-595-3284. You're listening to Carol Jurgensen Sheets. I am known as Carol the Coach. You can visit my website at www.sexhelpwithcarolthecoach.com or my second website, which is just carolthecoach.com. We'll be back in a minute.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people. Every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell, so you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? I got an interesting email this week. He says, thank you for taking my email in question. My girlfriend and I listen to you on the radio, and she respects your opinion as I do. So here's the question. I've been separated for 9 months. I'm working on a divorce. Is it okay to date? I believe it is. But she's not comfortable with being around people who know my divorce is not final. Can you help?
And I would say to this woman, absolutely not. I know you probably think I'm old-fashioned, but you've got to close a chapter before opening another one. You know, if you're divorced, you should wait at least a year before you get into a relationship. And if you're married and getting a divorce, you need to wait for that to end 100%, then wait that year, work on yourself, get to know yourself, as I call it, date yourself, and then open yourself up to opportunities for dating. So that never flies with me. Okay, as I was talking to you earlier, you really can go and get a lot of information on my website. And again, that is www.sexhelpwithcarolthecoach. If you're a partner, you might find my Carol the Coach website interesting because I have over 600 articles on how to improve your self-esteem, how to fight depression, how to raise your kids, how to set goals, how to say no, how to be assertive. You know, men need that too. Sex addicts need that too. Sex addict females need that. So go to both of those sites. I highly recommend them. That's what this radio show is all about. It's about disseminating information, and that's another way I do that. And if you're curious to hear how I present, I have many television segments that I've got on my website under podcasts that show you how to access the five languages of love and improve your relationship, how to deal with conflict, and how to start thinking in a rich way as opposed to the stinking thinking that usually accompanies betraying other people or being betrayed. Okay, so I'm wanting to help this woman, Sandy, who says, you know, she's just been devastated by her husband's sex addiction. And she says, I have been doing a lot of soul searching and reading tons of books. The more I read, the more I do research on the internet, the more I listen to your podcast, the more I think my initial suspicion of sexual compulsion is correct. Of course he's in denial, she says. Then again, there are some things that don't fit the profiles I'm reading. Okay, well, I'm not an armchair therapist, but like I said, you know, in making decisions, we use our head, our heart, and our gut. So, until I clinically diagnose this man, I would never make a formalized diagnosis. Although my radar is going off and I'm saying, Sandy, are you kidding me? Of course his behavior is compulsive. He's blaming it all on you. Of course he has a sex addiction. But here's what she says that doesn't fit, so I wanted to address these issues. I do think he loves me. He says so, but also says he isn't in love with me. Well, Sandy, this is what I have to say to you. I just did. My guess is he does love you, and he can participate in these behaviors and still love you. That's called compartmentalization. And what I know to be true about any relationship, relationships that aren't plagued with sexual addiction, is that marriage is the institution that holds you together when you fall in and out of love with somebody. And that's natural. You know, it's not natural to look at your husband and go, I want a divorce, when you don't agree about something. But it is natural for you to say, I don't know if I made the right decision. He doesn't get me. He's not trying hard enough. I think I'm sick of this. I'm through. And then you take some time out and you go, you know what, I love this man. I want to be with him. You know, so again, remember this, Sandy, one statement. Marriage is the institution that holds you together while you fall in and out of love with each other. That is important. Now, number two, she says, we have always had a great sex life and we share each other's level of frequency and spectrum of sex acts. Well, I got to say, good for you. I think that means that you're probably participating on a very equal sexual relationship, and you got that going for you. Even in healthy relationships where there is no sexual addiction, people don't always operate with the same level of frequency and spectrum of sex acts. So, hey, I think that's wonderful. But remember, Sandy, sex addiction is not about sex. I know, doesn't make sense, does it? But just in the same way that sexual abuse is not about somebody wanting sex with a child, it's really about somebody wanting to exert control and power. Well, sex addiction is about approval, validation, it's about adrenaline, it's about risk. So you two can have a great sex life, and he can still feel the need to have fantasy and risk and diversity in other places. Lastly, you say, in light of his divorce proclamation, he has ceased all sexual contact with me and is even withholding affection. Prior to that, he was emotionally distant. He says he feels guilty. Okay. Well, I do not know what that means. I really don't. I don't know, you know, here's what I think. I do know what it means, but I don't know why that's a bullet point for why he doesn't fit the profile of a sex addict. Sex addicts usually have long periods of something called sexual anorexia. And that means that they withhold affection. They withhold sex. They abstain from sex. And that may be because they feel guilty. That may be because they fear intimate sex. That may be because they're conflicted. But that is a normal byproduct of sexual addiction. So, again, I think all three things that you bullet pointed are indicative of a sexual addiction. I mean, let's just say that these are all points that very well could occur in a couple where sexual addiction is occurring. Okay, she says, now, Carol, please know that there have been many individual things that have occurred in our many years of marriage, and they could have been red flags. They should have been red flags because they were excusable or he lied about them. I am a highly functioning person, and he made me feel as though I was being hypersensitive and that what I was concerned about were behaviors that all men engaged in. Yeah, I know. That's a common excuse men use. Oh, this is just guys being guys. I mean, I just was at my doctor's the other day. And he said, Carol, how's the coaching business? And I said, well, you know what I'm doing? I am now the only certified sexual addictions therapist in Indianapolis. And I said, I can't believe it. I want more certified sexual addictions therapists to come on board, and because this is an epidemic, and my practice is beyond full. And to be real honest, I love this population, but I also don't want to do this population all by its lonesome. I want community. I want other therapists to help me. I want to collaborate, and no offense, guys, but I'd like to be working with some other people, too. But I'm being bombarded with referrals. I'm not complaining, but I am just saying that this, and my doctor said to me, Carol, what's the big deal? There is no such thing as sexual addiction. It's just boys being boys. And that was from a well-educated man. Now, I happen to know, I mean, I don't know, but I suspect that my doctor is not a sex addict. He is a very bright 50-something man, but he shares the mentality of many men that are somewhat entitled. You know, he brought up Tiger Woods and he said, what guy in Tiger's profession wouldn't do the same thing if he wasn't standing in Tiger's shoes? And, you know, I don't know Tiger Woods. And certainly, I only know what Tiger has told us, that his behavior was compulsive, couldn't stop, that he was wreaking havoc on his family's life, that his wife became physically assaultive to him, that he hated himself, that he wanted to stop, and again, he couldn't. And here's the deal about sexual addiction, and we see this. Oh, I'm going to throw out a number here, and it's probably false. We see this in almost 95% of the cases. When a man decides to stop his sexual addictive behavior, and he's trying, and he's trying, and he's trying, and I should say a woman too, because I see this with all women also. It's not just men. I really want to make that point. So when a person decides they're going to stop, and they do, whether it be for a day, a week, a month, a year, 10 years. If they fall back to old behaviors and they participate, they slip and then relapse. And the difference between a slip and a relapse is a slip is a, oh, I looked at porn last night, I'm back on track today and doing well. A relapse is several hours, days, weeks, months of behavior. Much more ingrained, it's much more long-term. When somebody goes back to the behaviors that they were exhibiting before they stopped, they either go right back to the frequency and intensity of that behavior, or it's worse. They are trying new things that they never even tried before. That is part of this addiction. It is so filled with repression and suppression that when somebody decides not to work the program, not to talk to a sponsor, not to do his or her reading, not to listen to these podcasts, not to see a certified sexual addictions therapist, not to have a fellowship, then they end up being worse than ever because their unconscious has picked up on all sorts of ideas that they could have participated in if they were fully active in their addiction, but they're not because they are doing their best to fight it. And then when they give up and they go back to the sexually addictive behavior, it is way, way worse. Okay. She actually listed some red flags and that should have, she said, below is a list of my red flags that I should have trusted my intuition. Now remember, I said, you make decisions based on your head, intellectually, what you think. Your heart, emotionally, what you feel, and your intuition, what you know to be true. So this woman is saying to me, here's a bunch of red flags that I knew. She didn't pay attention to herself. She said, masturbating on the bus in elementary school. He sat in the back and was the last one off, but he started before the bus was empty. Okay, he took risks. He could not stop the compulsion. He was impulsive and risk-seeking. Two, Paul recalls that he started masturbating around 5 years old. Even though he didn't ejaculate, it felt good. Absolutely. Now, that's not necessarily sexual addiction. Most males and females at an early age pleasure themselves by touching their genitals. They don't know what it is. They quickly find out that it's wrong because their parents say, don't do that. Don't do that in public. But ultimately, that area has so many nerve endings, of course it feels good if you rub that. And so it sounds like Paul, doing this at 5 years old, and in some way may have even said to her that he didn't think he could stop. She also knew that Paul placed his penis in his dog's mouth at a very young age, that he held fond memories of finding a pornography magazine on the side of the road when he was younger. His father caught him and took it away. Well, I don't know that that's indicative of sexual addiction either. Lots of males and females are intrigued by pornography, by magazines, because they've never seen anything like it. And they covet it because they don't really think they're supposed to have it, and so they keep it private and secret. However, what I do know about sex addicts is that oftentimes, because of their wiring of the brain, perhaps some trauma they've experienced, perhaps some psychiatric conditions, and I don't mean to pathologize anybody, but you know, if you border on having some obsessive-compulsive behaviors, when you see this kind of thing, it sticks. And you want to see it again and again and again. So one person, actually I grew up with Playboys in my home. I looked at them. It was not that big of a deal. I mean, I knew it was wrong. I knew I wasn't supposed to. But I was not obsessed with going back and looking at it over and over and over again. I had many other things that I needed to be doing. Other kids, on the other hand, will absolutely practice doing, you know, looking at these magazines over and over and over again because it provides a sense of excitement and risk and all sorts of things. Okay, so again, she's saying these are red flags. I'm telling you they don't have to be, but certainly for her husband, all these are diagnostic criteria. She said, Paul didn't have his first girlfriend until he was 17. he had a lot of rejection prior to that. Well, I don't see that as a sexually addictive behavior. But she's trying to put it together, so I'm reading it to you, you know, because you too may wonder what you think about that. Okay. Then she says, he repeatedly mentioned enjoying being snuggled up like kittens or having pressure against him like that of laying under a mattress. I don't know what that means. I'm sorry, Sandy. I think she's referring to the girlfriend and that Paul liked to be snuggled up close and liked the pressure of laying under a mattress. I don't see that as sexually addictive either. Okay. Paul cheated on both of his first and second girlfriend, one with the other. Well, that sometimes happens. That does not designate sexual addiction. Multiple chat room virtual sex partners in college. Okay, well, now that's problematic, and I'd like to know what the word multiple means. Does that mean one, or does that mean 12? Does that mean 10, or does that mean 30? Because what we know to be true, that oftentimes the behavior gets more and more compulsive. So it may start out that he's just going to a chat room once a week, then it's two or three times a week, then it's five or six times. So we got to figure that out. She said, his heartfelt admission to me at 20. That he worried he was sexually perverse. I thought at the time when we were young that he was inexperienced, as was I, and wanted to explore normal things, different positions, anal, experimentation in college. Now, again, that's not necessarily sexually addictive behavior. She says, there was a long-term phone sex relationship with a mature woman with kids that I discovered in his phone records. I called and confronted her in a phone message. And what she found to be true was that the woman admitted that there had been an affair. She says, really, there have been multiple affairs, and he was obsessed with going to strip clubs alone. Before the smartphone, Paul would spend a lot of time on the computer and the internet history, and cookies would be cleared, but now he uses his phone. Yeah, I got to tell you, when people clear their website histories, you probably got a problem. So see, you know, here's all these indicators to Sandy that this man has a problem, and she just didn't listen. I got to tell you, the list is a page long, all single-spaced, and I am going to hold off, and we'll address these at another point. But already you can see that this woman knows what she's dealing with. So here's what I'd say, Sandy. You can't control Paul. You didn't cause it, and you certainly can't cure it. Remember the three C's. I didn't cause it, I can't control it, and I can't cure it. What you need to do is get yourself to a good certified sexual addictions therapist in your town. You go to the website sexhelp.com. Well, you can go to mine, Carol the Coach. Nope, here's how it goes. Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And it will take you to sexhelp.com, and you can look for the zip code in your area to see if there's a certified sexual addictions therapist. This is not a situation that any therapist can handle. I promise you that. So get yourself to a specialist, okay? Second thing is I want you to read some partner materials. I want you to read a great book, Mending the Shattered Heart, by Stephanie Carnes. She wrote the Bible on sexual addiction. I want you to listen to the April 20th show with Dr. Patrick Carnes. This man knows more than anybody about, and he'll give you some great insights. I want you to Google other books that are available to partners and pick one that speaks to you. You're already listening to my podcast. I really appreciate that. I want you to get yourself to a COSA, C-O-S-A, or an S-N-O-N, S-N-O-N meeting, because that's for partners of sex addicts. And if you can't find one in your area, then I want you to Google SAA telephone meetings. There's no excuse for you not to get help from other people that are going through your issues. Okay? I want you to do your reading. I want you to do your meditation. I want you to develop a fellowship. I want you to get a sponsor. I want you to keep listening to the show. I want you to develop a backbone so that you can decide how you're going to proceed. You know, yesterday I talked to a woman who has been through the ringer. Her husband molested her child. That's very unusual for sexual addiction. That's one type of sexual addiction. He was at the very beginning stages. We caught it in time. But one of the things she said to me is, do partners really stay with sex addicts? Am I wrong to want to stay with him? Because right now he's working a really strong recovery program. And I said, you know what? With sexual addiction, the likelihood of staying with the partner is greater than the likelihood of divorce. So don't feel bad if you want to stick this thing out, but you've got to get healthy. And part of getting healthy, I've got to admit, is getting strong enough to determine what are your boundaries. And I always tell my partners, if your husband or wife is not working a solid reprogram, then there's not much hope. Sexual addiction will always be in your future. But if he's working a program and you're working a program, you can be the new and improved. And that's why I say there is a gift to this sexual addiction. Okay, you're listening to Carol Jurgensen Sheets. I'm Carol the Coach. And as I end every show with this hopeful message, I want you to know that there will only be one of you at all times. I want you to have the courage to be yourself. I want you to keep listening to the show. Keep writing me. Feel free to call in and make sure to listen to Dr. Patrick Carnes, who's going to be on my show April 20th. I promise it'll probably be the best show of the year. Talk to you soon. Have a great week.